Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Hi, it's the Capital Connection, and I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Welcome back, Tom.
Alan, great to be with you by phone. I look forward to doing the studio again in the near future.
Yeah, we don't like that when you do the phone, but what can I say? Beggars can't be choosers. How's the state of things in New York? Are we fiscally in trouble? You're the comptroller. You look at what's happening. Are we in pretty good shape or not?
Yeah. Well, we just put out our most recent cash report, and in fact, from a budget and revenue perspective, we are in pretty good shape. The numbers seem to be coming in, certainly in a positive way, either at or near projections in some cases, or even higher in other cases. We continue to benefit from the bank settlements that everybody's been reading about and hearing about. You know, could easily approach a cumulative number of $7.5 billion, so that's keeping the general fund numbers up as well. So, I do think you've had, with everything else going on in Albany with the legislature and the governor, you certainly have had budgets that for a number of years now have held together, and fortunately, as the economy in fits and starts, though, continues to move in a positive direction, the state benefits from that from a revenue perspective, more realistic revenue estimates that the budgets are based on. So, you know, as we always say, we have a sense of caution because if, let's say, the stock market goes in the other direction, if there's a bump in the economy, you know, all that could change rather rapidly. But for now, from a budget point of view, from a fiscal point of view, New York is in pretty good shape.
So who gets the credit, you or the governor?
Well, you know, look, the budgets are put together by the legislature and the governor. So we do the monitoring, and I'd like to think that when we do our reports, we do our analysis of the budget proposals when they first come out and when they're enacted, that that's considered as part of the deliberations. But, you know, in fairness, the spending plan is developed by the governor and the legislature. So, you know, as I've done in the past, I give them credit for putting together more realistic budgets. And our job is to make sure that the money is being spent as intended, and that the taxpayers are getting the best value out of that. So I think we enhance the picture by doing our job in the way that we do it.
There are a lot of people I go around, you know, I talk to people and say, well, you know, maybe Andrew's not going to run again for the third term. His numbers are down. He's not doing that well. And there are a number of investigations going on. And then people say, well, who'll be the next governor? I said, well, two friends, actually. Eric Schneiderman and Tom DiNapoli seem to me to be next up. And a lot of people think you should run for governor. Are you going to do that?
Well, you know, Alan, it's light years away before the next cycle.
I'll take that as a yes.
No, there's, you know, the next cycle is 2018, and I have set up my committee again, and my committee is set up for the comptroller's office. So, you know, my goal is to, unfortunately, right, we've got to spend our time raising money, too much time doing that. That's why we need campaign finance reform. But, you know, I'm raising money for the comptroller committee, and that's what I'm focused on, and that's my expectation. I think, you know, it's 2015. Any speculation about who's going to be running for what in 2018 is pretty far from the reality of today. Eric Schneiderman's raising money for the Attorney General's race. I'm raising money for the Comptroller race. And, you know, I think people should expect that those are the races that we'll be running. Well, speaking for myself, that's the race I expect to be running in.
That doesn't sound like a no to my question, though.
Well, if you're asking me, you know, what am I focused on? I'm focused on being a great comptroller today and raising money to be comptroller again after 2018. So that's my focus.
Okay, good enough. Now, there's a huge piece as we speak in the paper today. It's what the Jewish people speaking Yiddish might call a shangle. It's a shame about the way in which the Buffalo $1 billion is being awarded and going on. What's the comptroller's role in examining how that money is being given out?
Well, you know, we are in the process of taking a serious look at a host of programs related to economic development. You know, look, Buffalo has been a city and a region that's in need of help and support. And, you know, I think most people would agree the governor was right to put a focus on the needs, not to exclude the needs in other areas like Syracuse and Rochester as well. But, you know, we've done much with regional economic development councils, with various new programs and old programs at Empire State Development. Well, we're starting to take a more measured look to see what the return on the taxpayer dollar has been. As you know, we did a report recently on the advertising spent on startup and other economic development programs. You know, to the extent that we're going to look at some of the money spent in Buffalo, that might impact, on that question. But, you know, I would just say to your listeners, we believe now is an appropriate time as our economy has started to recover to really start to say, what kind of return have we gotten from these investments? Not just on the new investments like the Buffalo Billion, but some of the existing programs. You know, there's a lot of focus on IDAs, industrial development agencies, local development corporations. Those are mechanisms that have existed for a long time with appropriate criticisms that they haven't always given us the return that we wanted. So we're going to be looking at these various areas.
Now, you haven't been afraid to call them like you see them. The comptroller's office, it's very professional. But, you know, here's Andrew Cuomo, I guess I don't mind saying this, who has a reputation of being a bit of a bully. And, you know, he hasn't always been as nice to you as I think he should have been. Do you worry about his taking revenge?
No, I mean, look, the strength of the comptroller's office is its independence. And that means, you know, calling it like you see it. I also think the strength is not getting involved in the, you know, in the trenches in terms of, you know, guerrilla warfare, some of the partisan sniping that typifies too much of what goes on in Albany. You know, our credibility is in the value of the work that we do. So when we put out an audit that may be critical of a state agency, it is not personalized. It is not attacking the governor. It's saying, you know, we've evaluated a situation and, you know, either we don't find anything wrong or we may say this is what could be done to make it better or these are the real problems. I think, you know, the most recent example, and it obviously got a lot of attention, was the audit on the advertising contract, and especially the piece related to startup.
You know, and you were very critical, very critical.
Yeah, we were critical, and our recommendations were do it better for the future. Have metrics in place. Make sure you're measuring, you know, what are the outcomes that you're looking for. Make sure you understand what the outcomes are, so you're not just throwing money, you know, onto the airwaves. And you know, that's measured in terms of, you know, are you looking at how people are coming in to inquire about the program in terms of who applies? Did they hear about it because of the advertising? You know, so I'm hoping that our recommendations will be incorporated in terms of future advertising opportunities. You know, sometimes what happens when we say things, Alan, as you know, people get very defensive and they kind of dig in and try to undermine, you know, the value we're saying or attack me, you know, or the office personally or to be dismissive. You know, they don't know what they're doing, undercut our credibility. But I think, you know, 9 times out of 10, our credibility more than holds up because of our track record. You know, my auditors, as you and I have talked about, these are professional civil service people. They're not political people. I don't know whether Republicans or Democrats. They're doing their job, and if they don't do their job, they violate their own standards, and when peer reviews come up, we won't have credibility as an auditing entity. So when we put something out, it's very thoroughly vetted and very well thought through, and we call it on the merits. We don't get involved in the politics. You know, whether it was Ned Regan or Carl McCall, Arthur Levitt, whoever, or hopefully Tom DiNapoli, when we put out an audit, it's done professionally, not politically, and the results are for everyone to consider. Okay. Not everybody's going to agree with it, but it's in the public realm then.
Okay, now I know you give complete answers, but you have to be careful here because I only have 17 minutes. I got about 6 things I want to talk to you about. Okay, ready? Here we go. On political spending, the New York Times, no less, announced that the New York State Common Retirement Fund, which owned $20 million worth of shares in United States Steel, had persuaded the company to publicly disclose its corporate political contributions. How'd you feel about that win?
Well, I felt really good about it. I mean, U.S. Steel is, you know, a company that folks know. We're up to 28 companies now where we've had shareholder engagements, where we've achieved high standards in terms of disclosing political spending. It's very important in the face of the Citizens United decision. We are continuing that effort, engaging with other companies, sometimes bringing it to a shareholder vote. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. But, you know, this was a terrible Supreme Court decision. The disclosure, at a minimum, is certainly the reform that we need, especially as we head into a big national election next year in 2016.
I like it. Talk to me about oil trains. You released a letter to 14 companies involved in real rail transport of petroleum. What did that letter say, and what did you want to achieve by it?
Well, again, Alan, this is a way in which we use our clout as a shareholder, right? So we're concerned when we're invested in a company and they're involved in the oil train business. We see what's happening in Canada, in this country, with accidents that have really been life-threatening, and in some cases, lives have been lost. We know, especially in the capital region, you know, the Port of Albany, this is a big issue of great concern to many, appropriately so. So we wrote to these companies saying, as shareholders, we're concerned about potential liability. How is it that you are assessing the risk of being involved with the oil trains? What mitigation steps are you taking? What kind of insurance and liability coverage do you have? And the most important question really is, what kind of best practices are you adapting to make sure that we, in fact, God forbid, we don't have an incident, and if we do, how are we prepared to respond to it? So we're just trying to really shine a very clear spotlight from the point of view of being an investor, saying we're concerned about this. The public is concerned. Many public officials, you know, County Exec McCoy and Mayor Sheehan have been raising important concerns about this. What we're saying as investors, we have concerns as well. And how are you making sure that these risks are minimized, eliminated if you can, and how are you being prepared? What are the best practices you're adopting? So that letter just went out. I think we've gotten one response so far, but I'm hoping that we'll be able to get a better handle as to what these companies are doing to deal with this issue.
So the most interesting and most talked about prison escape has been happening. Have you been auditing the way in which that prison system is working?
We've not done any audits, you know, certainly specific to Clinton or, you know, the prison system. I guess the audit that comes closest in terms of touching on this general area, the overtime reports that we put out on a periodic basis, mm-hmm. and no surprise, corrections, you know, is always in the top three in terms of high overtime expense. I mean, look, the focus now, appropriately so, is in apprehending these two guys. They're obviously really bad guys, and they need to be brought back, and I know there's a very determined effort to do that. I'm sure there will be, you know, the governor's asked the inspector general to do a report. I'm sure there'll be a great deal of analysis about what happened and why, and if there are any changes that can be instituted. But I think now's the time for there to just be a concerted effort to recapture these guys, and we certainly don't want them to do any harm to anybody else.
But you want to make sure, right, that the whole prison system is operating financially prudently and in order to keep people in there. You don't want to let people find their way out.
Well, look, I mean, you know, I'm sure there are many questions that are going to be asked about supervision, obviously, to the extent that at least now one person under arrest, one person on leave, staff people there, you know, obviously a lot of personnel questions come up. I do think, you know, staffing levels have to be looked at. That was really one of the takeaways from the overtime reports that we've put out again, where, you know, where you look at corrections, you look at, you know, mental health, you look at office people developmental disabilities, the kind of 24/7 agencies that we have in the state where, you know, to keep headcount down as a way to be efficient, quote unquote, you know, if you're racking up all kinds of overtime, what's the impact in terms of the quality of the coverage that you're providing? I'm not suggesting that in the case of Clinton that was an issue, but staffing levels, I think, is something that we need to look at in general, and certainly I think in this case, that's something that the department, I'm sure, will look at. You know, short term, got to get these guys back, and then obviously a lot of questions have to be answered long term.
Tom DiNapoli, you and Attorney General Schneiderman have announced charges against a Georgia resident for stealing over $200,000 in New York State pension benefits. Now, there was a movie about this. They propped up the guy and they kept him, you know, theoretically alive, even though he was dead. And somebody collects some of those checks. And in this case, the defendant who allegedly stole these pension benefits issued to his deceased mother from 2009 to 2013. That's 4 years. How do you find out that the mother is actually dead?
Well, you know, this was a case, and unfortunately we've had a few of these of late. Last week there was a case of the fellow in Queens who's, you know, literally left his dad's body in the morgue and was still collecting checks. So we have a compliance unit that we've really stepped up the effort to try to verify that, in fact, people getting retirement benefits are absolutely entitled to it. So, you know, this was a case that came to our attention. The fellow was serving as executive to the mother's estate. It did not notify our system of her death. You know, again, someone's out of state makes it a little harder for us. But, you know, the message is we are, you know, going to find you. We are, you know, years ago, our main effort was, you know, prior to my getting there, just getting the checks out. Well, you know, I think we've learned the hard way in recent years that we have to be verifying that, in fact, these benefits are being paid to the rightful beneficiaries or retirees. So now we have a unit that is very careful in tracking. We've had other cases where people have retired, come back to state service, and have exceeded their earnings level. We had a case like that in Nassau County. So, you know, we publicize when we do these charges. As you point out, this is one we're announcing this week with Attorney General Schneiderman, because we want to get the message out there. You may think you're gaming the system short term, but we're looking and we're going to find you. And we found now a number of cases where people are collecting checks that they shouldn't be, either because they've falsified information or in the most extreme cases, someone's died and they're still cashing the check. So, you know, we're looking and we're finding, and we're going to bring people to task, get the money back, and have people pay the price for their corruption and for their stealing.
So you have been instrumental in looking at the way in which corruption has come down in New York State. And you've done an awful lot to make sure it doesn't happen in the comptroller's office. I know that. But I wonder, because it has scared the hell out of an awful lot of politicians in New York, is Preet Bharara and his famous stay tuned, meaning more people are going to get indicted and taken off. What do you make of all of this? Because I noticed that Andrew Cuomo is going out less, that his people aren't being, according to the Times, are not being nearly as aggressive in raising campaign money. Do you think it's all paying off?
Well, you know, first of all, I give Preet Bharara a great deal of credit for really going after the issue of public corruption. I think it sends a very strong message, again, that if you think you're going to get away with it, no matter what your position is, you know, someone's going to be looking. You know, again, getting back to the partnership that Eric Schneiderman and I have, we've had a number of arrests, including of state legislators that have been involved with, you know, gaming the system as far as, you know, reimbursements and use of grants and so on. But obviously, you know, the U.S. attorney has taken it to a whole nother level. You know, so on the one hand, Alan, it may shake people's confidence even more, but I'd like to think in the long run it gives people a sense that someone's looking. What we have to get back to is some of the fundamental questions, though, and what more can we do in terms of disclosure, especially in terms of outside income. Perhaps it is time for us to look at that question of limiting, if not eliminating, earned outside income for legislators in exchange for a better compensation package. I do think the other piece that is not even talked about like it was before, which I think is a terrible mistake, is the issue of campaign finance reform, because so much of this does get back to, you know, the influence of donations. And in New York, where you have these very, very generous levels, I think now it's up to like $60,000 per contributor that you can give to a statewide race. At the very least, there's an appearance of compromise with that kind of money. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, we're locked into this system, and New York's an expensive state to run campaigns. To me, I'm not saying it's a perfect solution, but the only one that makes sense to limit the influence of private money and donations is to have public financing. Certainly for the statewide offices, I'd like to see it for the legislative races as well. It diminishes the influence of private money. I think it makes it easier for other people to run that may not have personal wealth, so therefore you could have competition. Now, you know, you still have the issue with the legislative districts, you know, as far as reapportionment and gerrymandering, but, you know, I think the two issues are non-competitive districts the way they're drawn and people not having the financial resources to run. If we had public financing, at least one of those challenges would be dealt with. So, you know, I am just somewhat disappointed while there is still talk about ethics. Nobody seems to be talking very aggressively about public financing and reducing the amount of campaign dollars. So yes, that, to me, has to be done.
Yeah. Why in the world would they give campaign dollars out to people like Bernie the bartender, who gives you an opponent when you're not used to having one? Why would you vote for that? That was a rhetorical question.
No, I understand. Yeah. I understand. Believe me, I understand.
That was a rhetorical question. Okay. Talk to me about the minimum wage boost in New York State. Can the state afford it?
Well, you know, I think so. I mean, you know, the question always comes back, well, we'll lose jobs. People will, you know, we'll lose jobs because businesses can't afford to pay it. I think the reality is when in the past the minimum wage has gone up, you know, we haven't lost jobs because of that. So, you know, I do think that at a time where, you know, the issue of income equality, you know, is broadly defined is a big issue, and you have many people, you know, that certainly have not benefited from this economic recovery, you know, if you raise the floor in this way, I do think that will help working people, working families, you know, survive in what for many parts of our state is, you know, is a very, very tough and a very, very expensive economy. So I'm hoping we'll see a positive resolution on that one. And I don't think that, you know, the job losses that the critics project will happen with the dire consequences that some put out there. It hasn't happened that way in the past. I don't think will happen this time.
Is it your assessment that you should be auditing the New York State real estate industry, which seems to have its tentacles everywhere, giving money to all of these politicians? Now some of the chickens are coming home to roost. Is that a job for a Superman or Tom DiNapoli?
Well, you know, our audits are of public entities, so we don't audit private companies or private enterprises. So that's probably a little beyond our, you know, our role. But, you know, look, real estate's a very big and very profitable business in the state, especially in the New York City region. And, you know, many of the players are, you know, political givers. I've gotten money from some of them, and many of them are also involved in giving money in charitable causes and very much part of making the city move forward. What you don't want to see is that money by poor policies in terms of, you know, the overall health. I mean, right, in a democracy, there's always that question, are the people who are most connected getting the benefit of the laws and the policies rather than the broad range of the public? But, you know, I'm hoping that in the case of real estate, you know, the big issue is what's happening with tenant protections, yeah. Rent control, and that, you know, it's in, as one, when I was in the assembly, my district actually had a number of rent-stabilized apartments. It was always important that those protections be there and that we try to strengthen them. And, you know, I hope that will be the outcome that we'll see perhaps this week.
So there's nothing that a controller could do to look at, for example, the real estate industry itself, but how about all the recipients of that money?
Well, we don't audit, you know, private contributions to elected officials. That's probably a little bit beyond what would be expected of our responsibilities.
I got you. Okay. So who are you for? I mean, Bernie Sanders is coming up real fast in the popular opinion polls, really fast. Who thought it?
It's that Brooklyn accent.
Well, he certainly has that.
I proudly support Hillary Clinton, as I did, you know, when she ran 8 years ago. I think she is well prepared to be president of the United States. I was at Roosevelt Island for her big address. I thought she did a great job in reminding people what she's about, what her experiences are, and what she stands for. You know, I don't think it's bad that there's a little bit of competition, but, you know, I feel in the end Hillary Clinton's going to be our nominee. It's important for Democrats to unite. I am not one that would view her nomination as a guarantee that she'll be elected. In fact, I think there are a couple of those Republican possibilities that would be very, very strong on a national ticket. And
how about Donald Trump?
I do not think he's one of the ones that would be very strong. You know, I think the names that we all hear about, you know, Bush. Rubio, Walker, Kasich from Ohio, who many people tell me is the sleeper one to watch. You know, I think the likelihood of there being one of those as the nominee is more likely than the others, and I think any one of them would be very, very competitive. So, you know, Democrats always have the problem of not always uniting. So let's go through the early primaries and caucuses. I think Hillary will do just fine, and then I'm hoping we'll have a strong, united Democratic Party. It would be great for us to have a New Yorker in the White House, someone who knows who Alan Chartok is. I think that's pretty good. And
might be good for you, but not for me.
I think she's going to be a great candidate. And again, we can't take anything for granted. And I think it's probably going to be a very, very tight race in 2016.
We're out of time. Our guest is always a wonderful man to talk to, New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Comptroller, however you spell it. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Alan.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
We'll be right back.